CEO of Goya Foods, Bob Unanue, joins us to talk about his faith, his battle against child trafficking, and his new book, Blessed. A timely film opens this week. David White, Scott Baio, and Samira Armstrong are here to preview their new film, God's Not Dead, In God We Trust. And the executive producer and driving force behind the movie Cabrini, Eustace Wolfington, is here. He's launching a new school initiative to spread the saints' incredible witness the world over. Begins right now.
Now, Raymond DeRoy.
A warm welcome to all of you joining us in the United States and the world over. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send me an X post. I'm at Raymond Arroyo. Lots to get to. First, some news. He was the beloved actor best known for his roles in Field of Dreams, The Lion King, and, of course, the iconic voice of Darth Vader in the Star Wars franchise. James Earl Jones passed away this week at the age of 93. He began his career on Broadway in the late 50s, eventually winning 2 Tony Awards, 2 Emmys, a Golden Globe, and a Grammy, as well as a Lifetime Achievement Oscar in 2011. What many didn't know was that Jones was a convert to Catholicism while serving in the U.S. Army in Colorado before becoming an actor. There he met a Jesuit priest who, in Jones's words, helped me understand who Jesus really was. He once said that his greatest honor throughout his illustrious career was recording the New Testament. In 2023, he played a priest in the pro-life film Gimme Shelter with Vanessa Hudgens. Jones donated his entire salary to the film for a crisis pregnancy center on which the movie was based. James Earl Jones, may you rest in peace. And our prayers go out to all our friends and family in New Orleans who were inundated by the floodwaters of Hurricane Francine this week. The storm made landfall in southern Louisiana on Wednesday, causing flash flooding and overwhelming the New Orleans pumping system. Power outages and standing water remain a problem. We ask you to keep all those affected by this storm in your prayers. And New Jersey-based Goya Foods has grown to become the largest family-owned food company in the United States, catering to the Hispanic community and far beyond. Robert Unanue is the president and CEO of Goya, and he's here tonight to talk about his ongoing war against child trafficking, his soon-to-be-released new book, Blessed, Donald J. Trump and the Spiritual War. Please welcome Bob Unanue. Bob, thanks for being here. In July of 2020, you relate in the book that you were invited by then-President Trump to the White House, and you said the following in the Rose Garden. We're all truly blessed at the same time to have a leader like President Trump, who is a builder. And we pray for our leadership, our president, and we pray for our country that we will continue to prosper and grow. Now, Bob, that comment made you and your company, Goya Foods, a target. In the book, you describe the backlash to your comments there as the incarnation of evil. Why?
Well, thank you, Raymond, for having me. Yes, that was 4 years ago, and we still have a platform. I still have a platform because the word blessed was put on my lips by the Holy Spirit. And I was selected to be an instrument. And I believe at that point, the Holy Spirit put his hand on Donald J. Trump, not only then, but even till last July, this July, when a bullet, he turned his head at the right moment at 6:11 in the afternoon, which is St. Paul to the Ephesians, put on the armor of God. Mm-hmm. And a bullet that was going perpendicular to the president went parallel and grazed him. But he has been protected by the Holy Spirit, I believe, because he's been chosen to help lead this country closer to God. And, the book is about that, and it's about a whole bunch of other things that happened along the way. But we are in a spiritual war, a war of loving and building versus hating and destroying. And our country is in a great crisis. We're not valuing our children. We're not valuing each other. And so we're at the crossroads. Mm. an incredible point in our history where we need to value each other, love each other, and not be hating and dividing.
Bob, in your book, Blessed, you write, "The hail of negativity surrounding the words that God brought to my lips can only be described as the incarnation of evil." It's just so telling that on the day when President Trump announced an initiative to help Hispanics, nefarious people tried to destroy a family-owned Hispanic business. That's evil, end quote. Bob, was this just a partisan reaction? I mean, there were reports that even your own board silenced you. How did you weather this storm?
Well, you know, I was there for a couple of reasons. One is I wanted to offer the country food. You know, we are essential business, but work is essential. All businesses work is essential. We need a reason to get up every day, a purpose, God, family, work. It's so important. And so being attacked that day, it ignited cancel culture. I was on with your friend and our friend, Laura Ingraham, who said, "Are you going to apologize?" And I said, "Hell no." You know, you apologize and then you're fired. But the Holy Spirit at this point, I believe, God sees that we're moving away from him. And he wanted us to come closer. So this ignited not just the cancel culture, but a spiritual war of good versus evil. And you know, like Jose Marti says, the Cuban poet, you know, there are those born to love and build, others to hate and destroy. And we're called to love. You know, so many people either love President Trump or hate him. But, you know, we may disagree with people. I might disagree with Biden or Harris, but we're not called to hate. And the hatred that has been launched toward President Trump is evil, you know, and the only way to conquer hate is through love. And this is the battle that we're in.
Well, Bob, the book Blessed chronicles what happened since that day at the White House. And a lot happened. You launched Goya Cares, which is an effort to combat child trafficking. You became an executive producer of Sound of Freedom, which became the biggest film of last summer. You personally hand-delivered 100,000 rosaries to war-torn Ukraine. And you used your platform as a national Hispanic leader to address issues that, frankly, get very little attention. How were those efforts inspired by this Blessed controversy, if you will?
Yes, well, I did receive a lot of backlash. I received threats. And you know, but it says in the Bible 365 times, "Be not afraid." And the Holy Spirit represents courage. And you see that courage with Donald J. Trump, who takes it on the chin every day. But, you know, I was raised in a way privileged, not privileged with money. I had my mom was poor. We didn't come up wealthy at all. But, you know, now we're doing OK. But the privilege I received was two parents who loved us six children. And I have six children, 14 grandchildren, two parents who loved us. So to whom much has been given, much is expected. And if we are given love, you know, what I've found out through the Sound of Freedom and going into Central America and seeing where parents, mothers are selling their children for pennies on the dollar, they go to the cartels. The cartels are selling them in this country. Last July, April 26, 2023, Tara Lee Rodas testified before Congress. She was part of ORR, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, and HHS, Health and Human Services, Javier Becerra, and Alejandro Mayorkas. She said that the U.S. is the middleman. There's hundreds of billions of dollars in the two industries that have been grown by this administration, which is drugs and trafficking. And our children, when her testimony last year spoke of 85,000 children missing, it's now, and it's probably more, 325,000 children missing.
Bob, and what is Goya Cares doing to address that crisis? And it is an unspoken and largely unseen crisis.
Well, I was at a studio this morning. I met Tim Tebow, who's also, there's so many great hearts out there. What we're doing is raising awareness. And the Sound of Freedom kind of brought that awareness to our attention. We're going into schools, assemblies, classrooms, trying to educate children, teachers, parents on the dangers of trafficking. It's such a big industry. You know, the genie says to Aladdin, never drink from the cups of money or power. You'll never be satisfied. It's about money, the biggest industry in the world. It's about power, staying in control. This government wants to stay in power so we can exploit there's so many children being exploited, you know, and put into basically slavery. And Dr. Carson, a good friend also, he said there's more slaves in the world today than in the history of the world. And that's what's happening. And this is why this election and our government has to be held accountable for profiting. You know, when Tara Lee Rota says we're the middleman, we're profiting. Children, parents selling their kids for pennies, and then they're being exploited. 40 kids dropped at one address to sponsors, to foster care. That's not a home. It's a business. And we're not valuing the child. We're not valuing the child in 39 weeks of pregnancy. We're not valuing the child after they're born or at any point. And that's what's happening to our world. Our value comes from God. It doesn't come from a map, a flag, or a letter. You know, there's a map flag, minor attracted persons. Mm-hmm. There's furries. There's all the letters. Even the letters are fighting. But that doesn't give us value. What gives us value is that we're children of God, and we need to love God and love our neighbors as ourselves. But we don't value ourselves. How are we going to value others?
The abortion question, which is really the starkest difference between Harris and Trump, was addressed at this debate this week. Here's what former President Trump had to say when he was asked about his stance. Listen.
But her vice presidential pick says abortion in the ninth month is absolutely fine. He also says execution after birth. It's execution, no longer abortion, because the baby is born, is okay. And that's not okay with me. For 52 years, they've been trying to get Roe v. Wade into the states. And through the genius and heart and strength of six Supreme Court justices, we were able to do that.
Bob, in your estimation, how will these two candidates impact the right to life and abortion in particular?
Well, you know, Raymond, this is marketing, and the Dems are very good at, the left are very good at marketing, and it's evil. It's evil. We're taking the life of a child. What Donald Trump says is that he's okay with 6 weeks, you know, the life of the woman, rape, incest, et cetera. And we can argue 6 weeks, 15 weeks, but, you know, the ex-governor of Virginia was okay with having the child born and then having the doctor and the mother decide whether it lives or dies. With Clinton and Bush, partial birth abortion, they put in partial birth abortion to get the stem cells. Now, partial birth abortion is bringing the child out breech, leaving the head in the woman, mm-hmm. and then cracking the skull and removing those particular cells. So this is a horrific thing, and you're doing that at almost full birth. So when you don't draw the line, you know, where is the line? Like I said, they're focusing on this smokescreen of the 39 weeks of pregnancy. For me personally, it's, you know, from conception to death. You know, it's not the fault of the child that if somebody you either are for life or you're not. But the problem is, you know, 325,000 children missing because we're profiting off of them. We're not valuing life at any of the 39 weeks in the womb, whether it's 6, 15, or whatever, or full term. We're not. And then there is no line. Once the child is born, they were dropping infants over the border with four months old with several DNAs in them, a year and a half old children with 30 some DNAs in them. They're using these children as garbage, as
Bob. You know. Yeah, Bob. I mean, just to pick up on your point, Tim Walz, who is Kamala Harris's running mate, he signed a bill in Minnesota that eradicates child care for a child that it survives an abortion. So in some ways, he is not protecting a child that's been born. I mean, and that's verifiable. So there's a big difference here. And I think even some in the pro-life movement, for whatever reason, whether personal or otherwise, seem to want to smudge the difference. And I just think you got to look at the record. What are these people advocating? What have they voted for in the past? And what are they really representing? But before I run out of time, Bob, a Pew Research poll released this week finds that President Trump is leading Vice President Harris by 5% among Catholic voters, 52 to 47. But within those numbers, the poll finds Harris leads Trump 30% among Hispanic voters. 65 goes to Harris. Trump is at 34%. What do you make of those numbers? And why do you think the overall Hispanic community is not supporting Trump?
No, that's changing, Raymond. In 2016, it was in the 20s. 2020, it was up in the 30s. And now it's high 40s to 50 in some cases. We hit 50% and Trump is in. But let me tell you, the Hispanic population, which is we are the second largest Hispanic population in the world after Mexico, we're tired of being the victim in trafficking. The Hispanic is the largest victim of trafficking. And we are the largest victim of inflation because we're the working class and we're getting hammered every day. We're being put into poverty and into slavery. Mm. And, you know, if the few want to control the many, they don't give a darn about the people, and they don't give a darn about life. They just look at the profit that they're making off of through in our government, selling children but on the cheap. And, you know, these cartels aren't making the money by themselves. They're splitting it. They have to split it. And we've opened the border for them. We've opened up the market to the largest market in the world for trafficking, which is the United States. And this is pure evil. Mm-hmm. And we cannot allow this government to exploit the people. And the biggest victim is the Latino, the Hispanic, and it's changing.
Yeah.
The Hispanic is fed up. Basta ya. Enough is enough.
I was struck by Donald Trump posting a happy birthday greeting on his Truth Social account to the Virgin Mary with a picture of the Virgin of Guadalupe this week. Does that have any impact, do you think? Final word.
Yes. I was in Mexico City last week. We lit a torch and from the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe, they're going to run up to New York for December 12th, which is, Our Lady of Guadalupe. Mm-hmm. So what unites Latinos are values: God, family, work. And those are the values that are going to lead our country forward. And the Latino is going to have a very big part of that success in leading us back to God. And Trump is more and more people are heading to Trump because of that reason, because they share the same values.
Bob Uwanuwe, we will leave it there. Blessed Donald J. Trump and the spiritual war, how the battle for the soul of this country began with one word by Bob himself, will be available at bookstores starting on September 24th. You can pre-order it now. You can also follow Goya Foods charitable initiatives, including the battle against child trafficking, at GoyaCares.com. Bob, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Raymond. God bless.
In the heat of a presidential election here in the U.S., there's a new film out this week that takes a hard look at the political process, freedom of speech, and religion. It asks the question, does God still have a place in American politics? God's Not Dead, In God We Trust, premieres Thursday, September 12th in theaters from Fathom Events. And there's a cameo in the film by somebody you might recognize. But here with me in studio, in our D.C. studio, a few stars of the film, Scott Baio, David White, and Samira Armstrong. Thank you all for being here. I'm going to start with you, David. You were reprising this role that we know well, Reverend Dave Hill, in this newest installment of the movie. The plots of these movies have been really about bringing God into the public sphere, or at least engaging questions about God there. This is kind of Pastor Smith Goes to Washington. Tell me how this fifth movie in the franchise came to be. Why resurrect this character again?
Well, first of all, thank you for having us on.
You're more than
appreciate
welcome.
It. In this story, the incumbent dies.
Yeah.
There's a seat in Congress that is a very pivotal seat the opposing guy that's running wants to stamp God out of culture, out of country, and they come to my character and they say, will you run? There's only 6 weeks before the election, and of course I don't want to run because what Christian wants to be involved in politics because it's a dirty business.
Yeah. It is a dirty business. We're going to get, I want to give people a little taste of what they can expect. This is the trailer for God Is Not Dead, In God We Trust. Watch.
If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under.
Now more than ever, Christians must realize that we are being called to deliver hope to a country that's feeling hopeless. Faith begins where your comfort zone ends. We need to step out into that faith.
We're 6 weeks out from Election Day, and a lot of folks have lost hope in the future of our country.
We must maintain a wall of separation between church and state. Religion has no place in the public square.
Once they bankrupt our country, they will have complete control.
Where did we go wrong, Lord?
We need someone who can light a fire in the voters.
The preacher. He helped on those education hearings.
I've been hired to manage your campaign for Congress.
I'm not a politician.
If you don't take on this fight, we could lose everything.
I found someone to run against you.
Are we worried about a preacher?
My next guest is a candidate for Congress. You're going to get a lot of questions about your faith.
Well, maybe people are looking for more spiritual and moral leadership in Washington.
You're making God an easy target for them, Pastor.
God's not the target, Lottie. Our country is. God's just standing in their way.
I will not be made a fool of. I won't stop until your moral high ground crumbles beneath your feet.
You don't win unless you play by their rules.
I feel like I have two options. I can either do the things my faith asks me not to, or I lose this race. It's like God keeps putting these impossible mountains in front of me.
Perhaps God put those mountains in front of you to show that they can be moved.
Please pray for David, guys.
In God we trust.
This contest is about shaping the future of our nation.
Keep your boy in line. It's like his God. I can give it, and I can take it away.
How do you know it's God?
Reverend Hill, your beliefs are a textbook example of Christian nationalism.
Whenever anyone of faith promotes a policy that you don't like, you label them a Christian nationalist. We need to stand up. Send the message to Washington. Tell them you're not ready to give that power up. You have the power to change things. Not me. Not him. You.
In God we trust. And without God, democracy will not and cannot long endure.
As you see in the trailer there, Reverend David Hill is really against this secularly aggressive opponent. Tell me, if you will, how you experienced this in a real personal way when you tried to have a screening of the movie here in Washington this week.
Yeah, I'm not going to blame Scott Baio.
No, no, don't
for this,
do that.
You know,
or Ray Wise.
Ray Wise.
No, I'm easy to blame. They don't want me in this town.
Yeah, we tried to do a screening in the Capitol in the Visitor Center yesterday. And what happened, Scott?
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Screening. This is, Visitor
this
Center.
Is how it was on set yeah. with Mr. Baio. Although
we have to thank Speaker Johnson and Jim Jordan for helping us out. But we had it in this beautiful theater, and when the other side of the aisle, the Democrats, found out what kind of film it was, that it was a faith-based movie, uh-huh. and it was a film about
freedom of
election, and having that 40 million Christians that don't vote. Mm. Getting them out to vote, which is one of the messages of the movie, they decided to shut it down. Huh. And it's ironic because that, you know, the Capitol is for the people,
yeah.
but apparently not. So they just said, well, you're not going to be able to show this movie in this room. And they threw us in some other little dinky room.
Yeah, you're in a conference room now at the Rayburn Building, which is really enraging because that visitor center, first of all, I was opposed to even having a visitor center. The entire Capitol is your visitor center.
Yeah, well.
But they didn't want to mix with the grubby or outspoken voters, so they wanted to contain everybody. And they spent billions digging a hole on the north lawn of the Capitol to build this visitor center. And now they're saying people can't have a freedom of speech or freedom of religion in that space. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah,
I gotta
so they
say.
Boxed us out, and it was not because of the message of the movie.
Horrible. Scott, tell me what drew you to this project. You play Wesley, who is the campaign manager to State Senator Peter King.
Well, they paid me a lot of money, Ray. I mean, what are you crazy? Joking. I'm joking. First of all, I like the other movies. David is a friend of me and my family. Our kids used to go to the same school back in Los Angeles. Mm. But I read the script and I thought it was just a fun role, and I love the message of the movie, which is that 40 million Christians don't vote, and I'm sure that a large percentage of those people complain about things in the country. And I thought, well, a few people would get off your rear ends and vote, you might affect change—the change that you're looking for. And because I have a daughter, I want her to grow up in the country that I grew up in, Ray.
Yeah, I want to show people a little clip. This is you and Ray Wise, great scene.
Pete, Hill just got real money, which means real media buys and real influence. Yeah. Now we can afford staff, rallies, office space. Be a mistake to underestimate this guy. Sure. People love an underdog story.
So what do you suggest?
Senator, great speech.
I suggest we put a debate on the books and end this, but we have to control it.
Unlike the podcast.
That was child's play. This is where you finish him.
Wow, Charles is still in charge. Hardball politics. Tell me about Wesley, and did you enjoy playing the heavy? We really don't usually see Scott Baio in a role like this.
It's more fun than you could possibly imagine. It is, because you have a lot. Because you have a lot of freedom. You could, like, there's a scene with Samir, who's going to come on here, where we have a history in the movie, and I would say things to Samira as her character, things, and you know she would look at me and I'd say, well, I'm just going to throw it out there, because I start making fun of her weight because I'm just a creep.
Yeah.
And so when you're a bad guy, you can say pretty much anything, and the director can go, just take it back a little bit.
Pull that back just
so
a bit.
So you have tremendous freedom.
How do you make fun of Samira's weight? Look at her. I mean, my gosh.
She's beautiful.
It looks like she spends every minute in the gym. Just look at her. Samira, I haven't forgotten about you. In God's Not Dead, you play Lottie, who is Reverend Hill's newly appointed campaign manager. I'll play a little clip of this, and then we'll talk on the back end. Watch.
I didn't run because you or Daryl talked me into it. I believe God asked me to.
How do you know it's God?
Well, you know someone long enough, you begin to recognize his voice. But sometimes knowing it's God is easier than actually listening to him.
Well, why wouldn't you listen to God if you knew it was him?
Well, no, right? For most folks, it's fear, afraid to fail, afraid to take a chance. But sooner or later, we all get hit by that storm.
Samira, tell me how your own experience running for office in Sedona, Arizona, you ran for mayor there, did that influence your portrayal here or give you any background into this character?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, a path in which I ran for mayor was far different than the campaign manager character that I play in this film. I, in my own campaign, operated with morals and integrity, and that seems not to be the theme in most campaigns. In Lottie's, my character, she played ruthless and very aggressive, which is the tug of war between her and Pastor David is playing by the book of unethical choices versus the morals that you live by.
Yeah. What surprised you about this as you got into it? And I'm going to talk in a minute. I know there was some revisions once you shot this movie, but did any lights go off when you read the script or when you saw it on the screen?
Yeah, I've been really driven to lean more towards faith-based projects, even in terms of I love telling stories where you get knocked down and then you have to pick yourself up and figure out what the right direction and path forward is. And this film has that. Apart from just trying to motivate people to vote, it really, I think, inspires the audience to get uncomfortable and find themselves on a journey of standing up for their country. And even when you think that maybe isn't the position that you've meant to be led to. Really, we can all take from that story.
I want to go back to David. David, Reverend Hill is an earnest but reluctant candidate in this movie. Are you trying to inspire others to run for office or just to allow their voice to be heard?
I think the God's Not Dead movies are special because they somehow radiate what's going on in culture at the time, right, for such a time as this. And our country certainly has gone through a lot of turmoil and in different ways. Like Scott said, even, you know, it's not the country that we grew up in. Mm-hmm. We hardly recognize it anymore. And so with this, the idea that 40 million American Christians, the stat that 40 million American Christians don't vote in presidential elections and that 15 million out of that 40 aren't even registered to vote. This movie, hopefully, is about taking that step, going outside of your comfort zone for the things that maybe you don't want to get involved in, you don't want to do, but God calls us for such a time as this to step out. And that's really the heart of this movie.
Scott, you were raised Catholic and returned to faith a few years ago. You were rebaptized. Has that influenced not only your participation in this film, but your approach to work in general? Has it changed the way you look at projects and what you'll do or not?
Sure. I mean, I'm more inclined to do things like films with David and these types of movies. Absolutely. I mean, I said this before. The reason I do this is because I believe also because I do it for our daughter. I do it for her. So the country that she will inherit will be something that I remotely recognize.
Mm. Yeah, boy, has the world changed since. Yeah. I mean, so many of us grew up watching you and grew up along with you in Happy Days and Charles in Charge. That era seems to have, that we had unity despite our
political
differences.
It's like we lost Happy Days, Scott. Yeah. Happy Days aren't here right now.
I'm with
you. We want
you.
Them again. Happy Days.
You should do a reboot on Happy Days. Oh.
But yeah,
Happy Days are here again.
Well, that'll be after this movie is released.
No, I'm happy to do it if it helps. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I am so excited about doing films like this is because I gave up so much stuff when I came out for Trump in 2016. I gave up my career basically, and I knew it, which was fine. But I do it for my child.
Hmm. Brave. Samira, you've spoken about how you believe God led you to this project. How so? And how does your faith shape or influence the roles you play?
Yeah, I've come to understand my faith a lot more deeply in the last 4 years, given what's going on in the country. After I ran for mayor, I was really questioning what I was going to do with my life. And I do believe that God gave me this gift of storytelling, and I was inspired to pick that back up. I, too, spoke out in support of President Trump. I did in 2020. And you sort of trade your career for your beliefs if you're willing to do that. But I did feel that along the process that God was with me the entire time, and there would be an other side. And I do believe this is the other side. So I'm excited. I'm excited to tell other stories that revolve around these sort of narratives.
It's a great pity to me. You know, there was a time I was just watching someone sent me a because I'm a huge Sinatra fan, and it was Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin doing a fundraiser for Ronald Reagan in 1980. And you had Charlton Heston and Fred McMurray, these huge actors there. And I thought, what happened to the time where you could come out and support the candidate of your choice and not have to pay a political price? In fact, you just went on with your business because it was assumed everybody disagreed. What happened there? What changed in your industry?
Hollywood.
It's a good question.
Hollywood became propaganda machine.
I think that it's media driven. I think it's the news picked sides and started propagandizing.
It's a great question, though. Like, yeah, when did that happen, though? When did the media turn, too? You know,
I think it was probably. I don't know. I mean, it'd be a great question. It'd be a great study.
Yeah,
it really would. I mean, because it was like all of a sudden, everybody just hated each other.
Well, and everybody had to have one mindset.
Right. Yeah, and they'll blame Trump now. Now they would say, well, it's.
I know, but if you go back, Bush got this treatment. Reagan got this treatment.
Republicans.
It became a partisan divide that I don't really understand. The country's always been divided politically, but there were the things that united us, and it seems those things have been torn asunder. Let's get back to the movie, because this movie is really trying to unite people around the things that hold us together, principally faith. And the God Is Not Dead series has done incredibly well. The first film, worldwide success.
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
10-year anniversary, yeah.
And I mean, you had a, what, $1.5 million budget? It made $65 million at the box office. What keeps people coming back to this franchise? Why are they hungry for this?
I think because it opens up conversation that you don't normally have. You don't normally want to, you know, there's not a lot of movies that that obviously that Hollywood puts out about inspiration, faith, you know, conversations. Hey, let's talk about this with your friends, family, coworkers. It's not wrong to be open and honest about your beliefs. Right. And that's what the Gods of Dead franchise, I think, what makes them so sweet is that they are at the core. They're about hope. They're about inspiration to bring people to higher levels of insight to who God is and the purpose that he has for their lives.
You've got an incredible cast in this movie. I mean, those that are assembled here around the table and in our other studio, Dean Cain, Governor Mike Huckabee, Isaiah Washington.
Raymond Arroyo.
Well, that is a sad little surprise. You see, when I first read the script, I have to tell you, David, I read the script. I thought it was about a TV anchor who manages to pull off a high-stakes debate. And then I realized there was much more
like,
to
where
this
are all my pages?
Yeah, what happened to the rest of this? You know, it's like the guy who was in Streetcar Named Desire. He thought it was about a guy who sold flowers to crazy people, you know, and he was just a walk-on at the end. But you all went back. We shot two debate scenes, we should tell people, a little behind-the-scenes coverage for you guys. There were two debate scenes that were shot. The first one was scrapped because you rewrote the script. What did you add? What did you add to the script?
Well, first and foremost, we added more Raymond Arroyo.
No, less Raymond Arroyo. One scene was totally chucked out. You redid the debate scene because you wanted to kind of heighten.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like every single time you wake up in the morning, you realize there's something different in the news, right? Yeah. And so the movie was Tommy Blaze, who's written the last three of these, and he's such a great writer. Started 3 years ago, which is it's astounding that it's for such a time right now, right? And of course, as you go on, you start to put in some more of these things, and that's part of what the reshoots were.
Well, guys,
it was nobody's fault. It was not Raymond Arroyo's fault, for the record.
I thought the scene played beautifully.
It was,
but you all did layer in more of the religious conflict. This idea of being outspoken in your faith.
And Christian nationalism, things of that nature that have been, you know, on the front headlines that it's, you know, I think it deserved to be spoken more about. Yeah.
David, Scott, Samira, thank you all for being here. God's Not Dead, In God We Trust, is in theaters now. For more information about how to get tickets in your area, go to godsnotdead.com. Thanks again, guys. Earlier this year, we told you about the epic film Cabrini, chronicling the life and work of one of the church's most beloved saints, Mother Frances Xavier Cabrini. The entire project was the fruit of one man's inspiration, Philadelphia businessman and entrepreneur Eustace Wolfington. He's here tonight to tell us about a new initiative bringing Cabrini to young audiences via their schools. Eustace Wolfington, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Raymond.
Great
thank
to have you on set. But before we get into this new initiative, tell me about the response this film has received. I mean, we spoke last March when Cabrini was first released. What kind of stories are you hearing from the people who've seen it and experienced it?
Yeah, well, they're across the board. But basically, I'll be walking down the street and someone will stop me and say, I don't know how they know me. I saw that movie. Thank you so much for making that movie. It was just fantastic. And then tell me a story about what it did at their dining room table when they spoke around the house. Another gentleman went to see the film in Seattle. He came out. There was a piece of ground in Seattle. It was owned by the Cabrini Order. They couldn't get zoning. So he called and said, I want to buy that ground. So he buys the ground and gives it back to them. You know, so it was like a double whammy. There's been young girls have called and said, parents, my child had an addiction. I couldn't get them to go to rehab. They heard about Cabrini, and next thing you know, in rehab and back to life again.
Amazing.
But the main, you know, we're in a world today. I just saw an article put out by Bloomberg They're putting out a publication called The Republic of Distrust. Mm. And it talks about all the distrust in our institutions, our religious organizations. And Cabrini is really the Republic of Restoring Trust. Mm. People who see the movie are so uplifted, and they want to go out and speak out, and they want to do better. It's just amazing the impact it's had.
Yeah. I want to bring us up to the present. A local Philadelphia philanthropist saw Cabrini at a pre-release screening and had an epiphany to bring the movie to kids in the Catholic schools throughout the diocese, Archdiocese of Philadelphia. Right. How did this come to your attention? And had you thought of using Cabrini as an educational outreach to schools?
You know, Cabrini's been like a mission for us.
Yeah.
And this was a whole new world that we just backed into. Mm-hmm. We were looking to kind of ease off and take it easy. And he called me on the phone. He had contacted the Archdiocese himself and said, I want to show the movie to 15,000 Catholic high school students and 7th and 8th graders. And they were going to bus the students to the school, to the theater. You know, Mother Cabrini had a principle in teaching. Her principle with all her teachers was get out of the classroom and get in a social environment with your students.
Why?
That's how you get to know them.
You can't know them.
Mm-hmm. And the bonding that took place with the teachers and the students in this experience, I call it the event, was off the charts.
I want to give you, just the audience, a sense of what these students and teachers experienced. Here's a clip of testimonials from philanthropists, school officials in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. Watch this.
I first saw the movie with my father, and as we sat there watching the movie together, we looked at each other, and he said to me after, Andrew, we got to bring this movie to all the Catholic school kids in the diocese.
I heard about the movie Cabrini from Andrew McCluskey, who called me and said that the Ambassador's Fund for Catholic Education was looking to endorse this movie.
This felt like an important opportunity to both educate students about the life of Mother Frances Cabrini and also connect them to a rich experience with their Catholic school classmates.
Begin the mission, and the means will come.
Initially, I anticipated logistically it could be a challenge, taking 900 students, putting them on buses, and getting them into the theater, but it could not have gone easier.
Almost all of our students saw the movie. I would say close to 650 traveled with us on that day.
Our students were invited to see the movie, and we were blessed to have a preview where we opened it to other community leaders.
We went on a school-wide trip to see the movie Cabrini, and it was an amazing opportunity.
The Cabrini movie really had given us the opportunity to have extensive reach. I mean, there's not many projects where you can literally get 15,000 students glued to a movie screen with a beautiful story and inspirational message.
When many of our schools went to see this movie, the students thought, oh, we're going to go see a holy movie. The Archdiocese, the Ambassador's Fund is paying for us to see something holy and Catholic. But what happened with this movie, in every theater, it was total silence because the students were so engaged in what they saw.
Perché nell'ora della nostra morte ci verrà domandato che cosa abbiamo fatto per i poveri, i malati, coloro a cui è stata strappata la dignità.
I think a lot of times kids don't see outside of their small community, and this movie made them realize that the world is huge and their ancestors have come from all over and fought battles in the past that they probably never even considered.
It was not overly preachy, right? It was very real world. It was a story about a person, something that was relatable, something that was raw.
As a school leader and educator, you're always looking to give models to your students, and I thought it did a wonderful job of capturing a fabulous model within Catholic education and the world at large.
We can have high quality media that can also carry those religious messages forward that speak to a wide range of audiences.
We were in particularly amazed with the eighth grade boys being so touched by the movie. The number of positive takeaways that our students saw after seeing the Cabrini movie was simply amazing.
I received an email from a family saying, I am so happy that my child got to be able to experience this movie. The impact that it's had on their family and the conversations they've had at home would have never happened without this movie.
What kind of world do we want? And what will we do to achieve it?
I think it's inspiring for women. I think it's inspiring for anybody that's wondering, what purpose do I have? It's a true underdog story, and I hope other people don't just see it, but are prompted to act on that emotion.
Education happens oftentimes over periods of time, but sometimes education happens in moments. And it's important for funders to respect those moments where magic can happen.
I don't find many projects where you can have as wide as this one reached. We're playing the long game. This is about building future Catholic leaders. We're planting seeds right now for the next generation. I'm confident that we're going to have a high return on investment. I know some of that investment is going to show up 10, 20 years down the road, and I look forward to seeing the return. And people that tell me, I remember that movie, Cabrini, and what a difference it made in my life.
If you philanthropists want to make a difference in the world, what you want to do is get your youth, get your children, get your young adults to be able to go to see this movie. Because once you see this movie, you want to go out and you want to make a difference in the world. Make this a better place for all of us to live.
Incredible reactions there. The Archdiocese even created a teaching guide and a workbook to go along with the movie. Were you expecting that kind of response when you agreed to allow it to be shown to these kids? And what's the next step?
Well, as far as the response goes, a nun had seen this movie and liked it so much, she went out and had a private screening for 250 nuns just to come see it.
Yeah.
She's the one who put the workbooks together. She's the one you'll see in the film,
yep,
talking to philanthropists. Mm-hmm. And from what she did, we made a mission of going out to all the nuns who were institutionalized, mm-hmm, and showed them the movie. And the nuns, to a T, no matter what the order, the reaction was, you have validated our sisterhood. Hmm. And they just loved the movie. Because Cabrini represented to them what they gave their whole life to be. Hmm. And somehow no one gave them recognition. And they felt the movie gave them recognition for what, yeah, they did in their whole life.
Tell me what you want to do, though, with this initiative. Because now you've got workbooks already. Right. This sister took care of that.
Yeah.
You've got a kind of model. You've already demoed this. It works. You've got thousands of kids who've come and seen the film now. You want to export this now to other dioceses. How?
Yeah. There's 189 dioceses in America. Mm-hmm. There's 17,000 parishes. I think it's 1,200 and some schools. Mm-hmm. We want to duplicate exactly what happened in Philadelphia. Mm. Go to the archdiocese, work with the superintendent of schools, get a local philanthropist to support the movie, the exact same model,
yeah,
bus the kids, and have the event. But we want to go a step further. We want to then take it to the parishes. In addition to going to the theater, as we all know today, we can sit at home and watch a movie.
Right.
Because the whole system's been developed for us much better than going to the movie.
Yeah, and this movie now, you can rent it and buy it on Amazon, on Net. I mean, at all, yeah, the all the places
anywhere
that it's available.
And anyone who does it, by the way, and sees it, is so grateful that someone told him to watch it. Mm-hmm. But getting off of that, that's a little sales pitch.
Yeah.
What we want to do is have a Cabrini night at every parish. Because a gentleman, a friend of mine who started Catholic Leadership, told me that 75% of the Catholics aren't even going to church. And I think, and other people looked at the movie and said, this is a healing movie. It would be great to show this to all the parishes. And a lot of the people are falling away. I think this will bring them back.
And you have a portal that you've established, partnerwithcabrinifilm.org,
right,
which will allow people to interact with you all and arrange to bring the film to schools, to parishes, and the community, which I think is a great idea because it's not isolated. And this movie, it feels, should be experienced with a crowd, with others, with, yeah, neighbors, yes, with friends, because then you can enter it more deeply, yeah, and have the conversation that,
right,
goes on,
yeah,
rather than the private viewing.
Yeah. But either way,
yeah,
don't miss it.
You'll take them either way.
Yeah, because the other thing we want to do, we want to register. When you go to our site, yeah, you can register to be one of the 100 million people to see the film. What's important to us is that 100 million people see this film.
Why? Why 100 million?
That's the minimum.
Okay.
That's the minimum. We have a woman in Hong Kong who saw the movie, got in touch with us, and is aggressively promoting the film in Hong Kong, Singapore, and the Philippines, and feels we can get it into China. You know, every business has a product. Mm-hmm. When we created Cabrini, not any credit to us and not even knowing, we created a product that just hits everything going on in the times today. Mm. I mean, all the distrust we talked about, people come to this movie, they walk out, they're motivated about life again. They, as I say, young kids, you'll hear some of the testimony of young kids. They say the way she never gave up, all the obstacles that were thrown at her. If you're a handicapped person and you look at this movie, Mother Cabrini was a sickly woman.
Yeah.
And went around the world and created this empire. It's just given hope to so many people and courage to go out and do things.
I love that you're following her spunky example. I mean, she was one who found if there was a crack, you know, like Mother Angelica, if there was one little opening, and this is why, after seeing your film, I realized why. Mother Angelica told me many years ago, Mother Cabrini was her favorite saint. I see why, because she was kind of a never to be defeated, never say die none, who was an Italian, who just wouldn't give up. If there was an opening, she'd find it. And I like that you all are scrappily trying to find the audience that needs to hear this story and see it and experience it.
Well, when you get the feedback that anyone who's seen it, that reinvigorates you to go out and do it.
Yeah.
Like lots of times I'll get to the point I say, you know, Raymond, I'm 92 years old. What am I doing? Why am I out pushing this mission so much? And when I'm ready to quit, someone will come up to me and say, we just had 300 people look at the film. You can't believe the impact it had. And it recharges me to go out and do it again. You know, So that's Cabrini at work.
Amazing.
That's where she works.
I was astounded. The state of Colorado, unbeknownst to me, had the first, the first to institute an official recognition of Mother Cabrini with a Cabrini Day. Yeah. What is planned for Cabrini Day this year and are other states following suit?
Well, you know, Mother Cabrini Day in Colorado replaced Columbus Day.
Oh.
So in other states, like, for example, in Chicago on the 14th, they're going to have a big parade and where they made them take the statue down of Columbus.
Of Columbus.
They're now going to put in a Cabrini statue.
Hmm.
So what you have is you have the big thing we're trying to push right now is our first test market with families. It's Columbus Day, Cabrini Night. Columbus Day, Cabrini Night. So they have Columbus Day.
Yeah.
But then not that night, but in the following two nights, they'll all watch Cabrini in honor of Columbus Day.
And spend time together and discuss it and explore it. Yeah. It's a pity that they've pitted these two great Italian, contributors to the American story.
Well, they haven't pitted them so much as I think they recognize they're two different kind of people.
Uh-huh.
They represent two different kind of values.
Yeah.
And I think so. It's really a parallel, as Jason would say, it's a parallel. Nothing takes away from this. We're just adding.
Yeah, like, you're adding to it.
Or like our Lord said, I didn't come to change, I came to add.
And the Italian-Americans will love it because you get an Italian no matter which way you turn. So we're all in, Eustace.
Right, right.
Are there plans to create similar initiatives like this diocesan-wide screening internationally?
Absolutely. Well, as I say, we're starting. We'll probably be our first meeting in Hong Kong is going to be in January.
Wow.
We're kicking this thing off in October 2nd in Italy. Will be our premiere. We're going to be in Germany and Easter.
So you're just doing the international rollout of the movie.
And the same exact thing in Italy, for example. There's 900 theaters connected to schools. And there's 700 theaters for the public. So we're going to be working with 600 of the theaters, with the schools, with private showings, and in addition to the public.
As I often say, there's a lot of truth out there. Beauty is hard to come by. You all reached that mark. So, Eustace Wolfington, thank you for being here.
Thank you
for coming
in.
Cabrini, produced by Eustace Wolfington, is available now on most streaming platforms, as well as the Angel Studio app. You can visit that at angel.com/Cabrini. And if you're interested in partnering with the Cabrini filmmakers on bringing the film to your school or your parish, go to partnerwithcabrinifilm.org. Partnerwithcabrinifilm.org. That is all the time we have for now. Next week, I'll be joined by comedian and author Rob Schneider. Until then, we'll be scouting the world over for all that is seen and unseen. On behalf of the staff and crew of EWTN News, thank you for watching. I'm Raymond Arroyo. Bye now.